Welcome to the latest edition of At The Flicks, your one-stop shop for movie news, interviews and reviews.
We're changing things this time, Jeff. This is Darren's show. Over to you, Darren.
Hello. Remember those old video stores where you used to be spoilt for choice? Sometimes you need an assistant, one who did nothing but watch movies behind the counter all day. Someone to guide you on what's hot and what's not. Well, I bought into my very own virtual video store. And just like the very best video stores of the day, we can be found between a website for a laundrette and a website for a Chinese takeaway. And we're located on one of the dodgiest virus-ridden servers on the web. We created that 80s experience of nice middle-class families driving into neighbourhoods they'd never normally venture into just so they could rent the China Syndrome on a Friday night. So welcome one and all to the opening of Dazza's Video Emporium. Remember, if we don't stock it, we'll bootleg it for you.
Graham and I will be the virtual customers as Darren guides us through some of the movies he's seen over the last few months.
He will tell us what should be on the eye level shelf and what should be consigned to the bargain basement.
And after that introduction from the trainees, we are now open for business as I look back on some of the films I've been watching over the last 3 months. Guys, just watch out for the rat traps dotted around the shop. I'm trying to create a rodent-free experience for my customers.
So what's first up then, Darren?
Okay. Well, if you follow me over here to the humour section, you'll find a lovely little film here called Rye Lane, directed by Rain Alan Miller. We're starting with a bit of a British film here. This is a delightful comedy set in London, where a young man, Dom, who is heartbroken that his girlfriend has left him for his best friend, is caught crying in a cubicle by a young woman, Yaz. The two end up spending the day together, which involves them trying to steal back a treasured record from her own ex, along with various other adventures around the streets of London. I'm starting in a positive mood here. This is an absolutely lovely little film. For a start, it's absolutely funny and charming, but it really feels British. You know, it's got that sort of like really nice London feel to it. The two characters have this wonderful chemistry about them. There's a lot of great banter in it. And also there's a lot of creative use in this film of I wouldn't say fourth wall breaking, but there's lots of sort of like dream sequences. Like, for example, where at one point Yaz is telling how she broke up with her boyfriend, and it's done as if it's like a stage play. Dom is in the audience watching it. All little sort of quirky little things like that. One of the things about this film as well is it's got a great, you know, it's pretty much an all black cast. And it's great because it just feels natural watching it. You know, you've not got any sort of agenda here. It's just a bunch of people who are black and are just making this really great sort of everyday experience. And it is absolutely hilarious. You know, the sort of the scrapes we get into on the line. It's got that little bit of farce type to it, but it's just such a great, wonderful movie.
Brilliant.
So one to watch with the wife then.
Yeah. They are young people, and so there's lots of like sort of sex references and everything like that. There's things about dating. I'm 50 and I completely enjoyed it. You know, it's a wonderful, wonderful little movie. It's the sort of film that you watch it, and even though it's sort of set today, you could imagine like yourself growing up in the 80s and doing those sort of things as well.
Oh, wow.
Yep, you sold me on that one. All right. What else can you tempt me with?
Well, film number two, and this is a little obscure film here, is called Catch the Fair One. So this is one I caught completely by chance while on a plane ride. And it's about a Native American woman who once had a really promising career as a boxer, but she's now hit rock bottom. And she's devoted her life trying to find the sister that she had, who was kidnapped and told into a sex slave. She gets set up by the detective that she's hired to find him, and she finds herself actually handed over to the traffickers. But this actually gives her a break because it gives her a lead to follow as she starts to track down, beat up, and basically torturing the people who may hold the key to finding her sister. This one is a very gritty little movie. It's not compromising the subject matter at all, but it is also extremely exciting. It's very down to earth as you follow her through this, as she tries to track down her sister.
How graphically violent is it?
It's not over the top. It's not gory. It feels realistic. What I can say is that a lot of, when I say torture scenes, a lot of those torture scenes are more the tension of what she's going to do. You're not seeing like sort of like guts and blood coming out. It's not that sort of exploitative. It's kind of like, how far is she willing to go to find her sister? And it is extremely downbeat. You know, I think it's a really good little movie. And I don't think it's over-the-top violent. It is very dark and it is quite gritty. I would say it's kind of like a modern-day retelling of Hardcore.
You've sold me on this.
Oh, right.
Right, I'm in.
Yeah, but more of a sort of like a protagonist who is more proactive.
Okay. It's got some excellent write-ups. I'm just looking at it. It won a prize at the Tribeca Film Festival. She looks hard as nails, the girl. She looks great. Right, that's on the list as well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think that's 2 out of 2 so far, Darren.
Okay, so film number 3, if you follow me over here to the action section, we have here Accident Man 2. Hitman's Holiday.
Oh, right, yeah.
So this is a Scott Adkins movie. If you don't know who Scott Adkins is, you might have seen him without realising, but he's actually in John Wick 4. He was the gentleman in a fat suit. He has a reputation for doing action and martial art type movies. Does his own stunts. He's a martial artist himself. He actually does stunt work for other movies. And he's got his own little sort of following on the really cheapy straight-to-streaming type movies. I have to say, I'm a really big fan of his. Anytime that I'm looking for an action movie, if it's Scott Adkins in, I always give it a watch, because at the very least, you're going to get some really good fight scenes. So this one is a sequel, and it's following on more of the exploits of a hitman whose speciality is making his hits look like accidents. And this is based on the comic strip by comic writing legend Pat Mills. In this sequel, after wiping out most of his colleagues in the first film, Adkins moves to Malta, where he teams up with his rather pathetic companion to corner the market on hits there. However, it all goes a bit pear-shaped when the two are framed for an attempted hit on the son of a very powerful and scary female crime boss. Whether or not you're going to like this movie is how you are with non-stop action. And I mean non-stop, because there are great fight scenes in this film, but they go on and on and on. Now, for someone like me who loves fight scenes, it was great. But I can imagine that some people might start to find them getting a little laborious after a while. But if you like kung fu movies, this is a really good one to go for. And also, what's really great about this is there's this absolutely wonderful, colourful cast of fellow assassins, of villains. There's some really good stuff in this movie. It's about 90 minutes, which is a perfect length for this. It's by no means a great, nuanced movie or anything like that. But if you just want to have 90 minutes with a beer and just watch some really, really cool violence, this is the one to go for. Scott Adkins as well, he plays this hitman with so much utter. A lot of people have called him a cheap Jason Statham, which is kind of unfair. You know, because to me, part of the thing about Scott Adkins is he is the genuine real deal. He does his own stunts and he is a trained martial artist. So the fight scenes are really great.
Do I need to see Accident Man 1 first?
It's not 100% necessary, but it's worth tracking it down. And I'll say as well, Accident Man 1, if you enjoy that one, you'll know what you're getting in this one. You know, it does set in the scene. There is quite a few characters who are carrying on story arcs, but when I think about it, did start in the first one. I would say it's worth a nice little double bill, put it that way.
It looks absolutely hilarious. I'm just watching the trailer.
So how did I find myself in this situation, you ask? Became a professional killer. And yeah, it's a dirty job. I'm happy to get my hands bleeding filthy for the right price. Needed to keep my head down after what happened back in London. So I grabbed my fake passport and hopped on the first flight to anywhere, which turned out to be Malta. There's more people need killing in this corner of the world than I can keep up with.
And it looks hilarious. There's a guy gets a circular saw right in the middle of his head by accident. A clown with a massive hammer attacking. It looks great fun. I'm really impressed.
You're watching the trailer?
Yeah.
Darren's telling you everything you need to know. He is the trailer.
It's the phone. You can have the phone in the video store. What's wrong with you? Get with the times, Grandad.
Yeah, well, one thing about the first movie as well is Ray Parks, who was Darth Maul on the Phantom Menace, is in there. So it's and there's a big fight scene with him. So that's a pretty cool one. Also, in the first one, there's a young star called Amy Johnston, who is herself a martial artist, and she's been in a few martial arts type movies, and she is really worth checking out as well. So I would say, even when I'm talking about Accident Man 2, treat yourself to a double bill.
Okay.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. All right then. What section are we in next?
Okay, so if we go over here to the foreign language section, this is a...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Give it a go, Jeff, give it a go. There's nothing wrong with reading. So this is a film that was... this is a film that was at the cinema only for a week, but I managed to catch it, called Night of the 12. It's a French movie, which starts with a rather somber message, gives the amount of unsolved cases that occur in France in any year. And it just points out that this is just one such story. It starts with the murder of a young woman in an absolutely brutally horrific way. And the film follows a team of detectives who are investigating the case as they chase down suspects and try to piece together the young woman's life. All the while, you follow them as they go around many dead ends and you see the toil that it actually begins to take on the team. The minor details of this case is based on a true case. This film, I thought, was absolutely stunning. The idea behind it is that you are following the detectives on what they have to go through when they're running down a case and with the frustrations that you get when the case is going nowhere. It really starts with how the detectives have to break the news to the girl's parents. And you see the toil that this takes on them right from the start. And you follow them as they're going through this young woman's life and they're following leads. And then the leads look promising and then they go nowhere. And the film goes over several years worth of investigation. And you really feel their frustrations. The closest film I can sort of think to this one is Zodiac. But if you imagine Zodiac without any of the journalist type scenes in there, imagine if you're just following the police as they're trying to track down the killer to this young woman. It's an absolutely amazing movie, but also really draining. And you sort of get invested in this case. And it gives you an appreciation of what detectives must have to go through. You see everything from their eyes. Everything you learn is what you learn following them around. You've no sort of clues or anything like that. I was really, really impressed by this, but it is very hard work, not in the sense of it's boring or anything like that. Far from it. It's absolutely gripping, but it takes a toll on you, the audience, as you're watching this movie. As you walk away, it's probably one of the most what you imagine to be a realistic movie on what it's like to investigate in a case like this and it taking a hold and consuming, the people's lives who have to investigate it.
I'm intrigued. I'll even learn to read for this.
Oh, don't go too far, Jeff.
I'll try not to. That does sound good. That does sound like, in fact, that's something the wife would like as well.
Yeah, because she can read.
I taught her.
Okay.
Tough choices so far. What we got next, Darren?
Okay, so let's go over to the new releases section and the latest blockbusters. I've not got many blockbusters, I'm afraid, because it costs so much money to actually get all the Disney Plus movies. But I've got one here, Creed 3. So in this one, it's Creed. He's no longer associated with Rocky and he's coming to his very last fight. Okay, he's about to set out on a career as a fight promoter. But after he's retired, just as he's putting together a giant world title match, an old childhood friend played by Jonathan Majors arrives, having been released from jail and hoping to resurrect his own boxing career. Do you think things are going to go smoothly or is it all going to degenerate into a fight between the two? What do you think? This is a Rocky movie.
Yeah, I have seen this one, Darren. I know the answer to your question.
Okay, so first, let's get out of the way. The fight scenes are great. You know, the very last fight takes a very imaginative direction that we've not seen in any of the Rocky films before. The film as a whole, I was really, really disappointed with. I liked Creed. Yeah. I thought Creed 2 was excellent. I thought it was one of my favourite of all the Rocky movies. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. This one was just lacking. It felt, and this is kind of, I guess this is kind of like sort of, you know, the direction of it. I thought it was really bland.
Yeah.
In the way it was directed. It was almost like, I know I chastise you for saying this a lot, Jeff, but it felt like a television type direction. There was no sort of flair or finesse or everything. I know it's Michael B. Jordan's first movie, but there just wasn't anything to this, I'm afraid. There wasn't just any flair. There were no sort of scenes that I thought, wow, that's a really cleverly shot scene or anything like that. I just found it sort of really quite drab. Putting aside the whole ridiculousness of the fact that Jonathan Majors gets out of prison and manages to get a world title fight on his first professional fight. Let's put all that aside, because these are Rocky movies. I can forgive realism if the film is good and there's sort of some sort of, like, you know, really build that gets you involved in the fight. And I couldn't get into it. It just, from the point of sort of Creed, you know, challenging Majors to a fight, it was just nothing there. There was nothing that I felt really sort of invested in. And there was no sort of real sort of build to it. And it was almost like, it was the stereotype of what people unfairly think of a Rocky film being. You're going to a fight montage and then straight into the fight and the good guy wins or doesn't, or that sort of thing. I just found it really underwhelming. Those like subplots that you thought were going to be interesting, like Creed having to sort of deal with stuff that he did as a child, but just never went anywhere. It's just, I was just completely, really disappointed. Probably the most disappointed I've been in a film all year, to be honest.
I'm on the same page as you on this one. I went to see it in the cinema. Sorry, I didn't use the video store, but I knew they filmed it with IMAX cameras, so I wanted to see how that went out. And yeah, it's bland. It just didn't work. I mean, I found Rocky V more exciting than this.
That's a low bar.
That's how bad this is. Now, I everything that Darren said, I 100% endorse.
I mean, I actually don't mind Rocky V. I'm not saying it's good, but I think there is some good things to say about it, like the fact that the fight happens in the street as opposed to the ring at the end. But one thing I'll say about Rocky V is the clash between Rocky and Tommy Morrison builds really well, I think. You know, it sort of, you go from being the mentor and, you know, to him going down the dark path until he ends up on this collision course with Rocky. And I think one thing I will say, I think Rocky V is, you know, is the feud, as to take a wrestling terminology, the feud works. It's built well. It's, you know, yes. This one, I didn't feel that at all. It felt kind of like rushed towards the end. And yeah, so I was disappointed. But also, I think they could have been a bit more creative in not having this be a fight for the world title. And also, maybe not fighting in a ring in a stadium. Maybe have a brawl in a small gym outside of the cameras. You know, I just think maybe could have done something. It would have probably been a bit more realistic and, you know, would have been a bit different. Now, that's one of the problems with these films. There's only so many things you can do with the fight itself, you know.
Yeah. They didn't make enough either of Drago in the film. For what carried over from Creed 2 into this, there just wasn't enough made of what that relationship was. It just felt fake.
They didn't touch, but one thing as well, they didn't really mention that he was a promoter. It was kind of like you had to like pick that up yourself. It's funny actually, because in the trailer, and this scene must have been taken out, there's a scene where Creed is actually at a press conference and he's talking about his career and his retirement. And to me, I wonder if that was actually explaining what he was going to do with the rest of his life in that sort of, you know, he's taking a step from boxer to promoter. Yeah. But that scene obviously got cut. But anyway, very disappointing.
Yeah. No, I think... I think you're right. This is the first first miss of the films that you've picked. In fact, I could wander back over to the international section. That's what I thought of it. What's next for us, Dan?
Okay, so film number six, we'll have a walk over to the horror section. Don't worry, Graham, you'll be okay. We're only covers, they can't hurt you. this is one I found on Amazon Prime, a very weird film called Antrim. So this is a Canadian horror movie, and the film begins with a very short documentary about an obscure 70s horror film, which at the time of its few very rare screenings always seemed to end in tragedy. So, for example, at one screening, the audience actually burnt down the theatre themselves. First, it was thought to be an accident, but it turned out that the audience started rioting and caused the fire themselves. In another one, there was a very weird incident where a concession worker laced the popcorn with LSD, which again resulted in a riot and some deaths. After a failed attempt to get it to various film festivals, which incidentally the judges that viewed the film also died in mysterious circumstances, the film actually vanished until 2018, when a mysterious copy was discovered, which was found to be the entire film, but with added in scenes which seemed to be split seconds of what could be a snuff movie. After the documentary, the film is shown, but first of all, you get a very long, unnerving disclaimer stating that the viewer accepts all responsibility for watching the film they're about to watch. The film Antrim itself is a disturbing 70s-style horror film, and it's about a young woman and her younger brother going into the woods, trying to find the hole where Satan was sent through to hell.
This is the forest where the devil landed when he was cast out of heaven. And at that spot, we'll find the entrance to hell. The deeper we dig, the more the forest around us becomes darker.
The area is filled with lots of suicide victims and a weird couple of men who are seemingly are practicing human sacrifice. You okay there, Graham?
No, I'm not.
Go on, Graham, rent it. Go on.
Gee, gods, this is like the worst of found footage film ever.
I've got to say that when I started watching this film, I watched through the little documentary bit and I almost turned it off. Because that long, unnerving disclaimer that I mentioned must be there for about 30 seconds on the screen. It really puts you ill at ease. And I was there thinking, do I want to watch this? And I realised that little documentary had really worked itself on me. It really got me in this mood that this film that I was going to see could end up causing my death. Then I managed to keep myself thinking, this is only a movie. I'll be fine. So I watched it. Now, I've got to say, the film itself is really, really good. And it feels really authentic. As I've sort of said quite a lot on my other shows, I'm a really big fan of the Caroline Monroe's Cellar Club on Talking Pictures on a Friday night, which finds a lot of these sort of weird exploitation movies on there. And there's loads of these on Amazon Prime as well. These weird, small, independent horror movies that are filmed quite sort of unnervingly. It really felt authentic. And the film itself was weird. It really played with the audience, especially with these like little flashes of what could be some sort of snuff movie flying in there. But I did come away completely unnerved, but really felt like I'd seen something creative. The movie itself has this Blair Witch type story to it, with the young couple trying to find this mythical hellhole, but having to escape from these two weirdos as well. And it's a really unnerving film. But I found it really creative. It's a mixture of watching a straight movie and this found footage. Afterwards, because there's a little bit of another mini documentary that analyses the film that we've just seen and all the edits that have been put into it, I realised I shouldn't know more, you know, why this film worked is the mystery about it. But I kind of came away wanting more. I wanted to know where this film had come from. Why had it gone missing? Where had these edits come from? And who had found it? I wanted to know this complete backstory. And I know that it's better that you don't know, because that creates the unease and the uncertainty. But I kind of really wanted to know what was going on. Was it a cursed movie? Was it a coincidence? For me, that kind of showed that it actually worked as a film.
Wow.
I'm up for this. I'm definitely up for this.
I'm going back to the blockbuster section.
It's very easy to find. It's on Amazon Prime.
Right, I'll be checking that out. Graham, you're due to come over at some point. Perhaps we can sit with a glass of wine and watch that together.
No, thank you.
Okay, perhaps Darren's next choice will be more to your taste then.
Okay, so over to the action section again. This is a film that you can find on Netflix at the moment. It's a Korean action film and it's called Killing Boksoon. And this one is about a successful female assassin. And I've got to say, I have a real love of female assassin movies. Any that come on my radar, I go and watch. Maybe it's a fetish, I don't know, but I just love female assassin movies. Boksoon is a mother in her regular life, but she is an absolute legend on the hired killer scene. However, when she doesn't play ball with the rules of the society that she belongs to, she ends up being the target for all her colleagues. I give this film a complete thumbs up, a bit like Hitman's Holiday. If you like action movies, you will love this. As you can probably tell from the brief synopsis that I've given, is wixploitation a term? I don't know.
It is now.
Wixploitation. It is very much like John Wick. Boksoon belongs to this sort of weird underground network of killers who have their own rules and laws. One of the laws being that once a contract has been decided upon, it must be seen through. It's a really good action movie. The fight scenes are great. Swordplay, gunplay, martial arts, whatever. Yeah. And there's also something like really imaginative this. I feel like I've seen this in a film somewhere before and I can't think where. But the idea in this is that Boksoon has this ability where she can run through a scenario and a course of action in her head, and then she can see where it will lead her. So if she sort of like imagines herself basically attacking someone with a sword and going on a particular attack, she can sort of play out in her head whether this will lead to success or failure. So sometimes you'll see her in a fight scene that doesn't quite end well for her. And then it sort of rewinds back and she plays it in another way. And I feel like I've seen this in another film, but I can't think where I've seen her. But the point of it is what makes her successful is she's a really good analyst in a fight. She can judge people's strengths and act accordingly. There's lots of colourful characters. There is a sort of a really sort of, you know, good plot of her coming towards the end of her career and wanting a way out and to buy her way out, but finding herself stuck and has to continue with it as a hit woman. One of the good things about it is there's some really good world building. You know, you see scenes where she's checking out the training of young other professionals. And they have their own terminology as well. When they go on a hit, it's actually called a show. It just shows this sort of like this really sort of different culture that she has. I thought it was a really, really fun movie. One for the action fans.
Is this a good place to start on Korean action movies? So if this is the first one, and it would be the first one I ever saw, would that be a good starting point?
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I have to say it's not massively different from, say, you know, your American or your Japanese or a Chinese Hong Kong type movies. It's kind of a blend of many others, but it is its own thing. I think if you've never seen this sort of film before, you'd probably be really blown away by it. Some people may see it and just think it's like a John Wick knockoff, but it works really, really well. One of the things about it is that, you know, the character of Boksoon, she is a mother and they're sort of just seen as just like a sort of like a businesswoman, a successful businesswoman in the real world and having to juggle the two worlds. It's a little interesting thing that you get that you don't get in, say, John Wick, where he's completely in the Hitman universe the entire time. One of the things I like about Netflix is it does find these little movies and gives you know, a platform for.
Okay, I'm willing to give that a go. Thank you. Where are we off to next?
Okay, so film eight, we'll just go over to the Apple exclusive section, I like to call this, because Apple, they don't make many films, but the ones that they do tend to be really, really good quality. This one stars Taron Egerton, as a software programmer who discovers the game Tetris at a computer fair. And he makes a play to get the rights for the Japanese market to distribute it. However, to get those lucrative rights for the various platforms around the world, he has to compete against various parties, including Robert Maxwell and his sons. And more dangerously of all, he has to go and travel to a dangerous and unstable Russia to get those rights from the makers of the game themselves, all the time being stalked by the KGB. This one I give a really big thumbs up to. This film reminds me a little bit of Air, which I saw recently, in that when you first explain what the film is, you think, how can that be interesting? Because Air, for example, is trying to get a sponsorship deal for a new line of trainers. And you think, how interesting could that be? In this one, you've got someone trying to get the distribution rights to a video game. Again, you think, how dramatic a story is that going to be? And the answer is very, very dramatic. For a start, let's be clear, they completely toyed around with the actual reality of the situation. Yes, they had to go to Russia to get these rights, but the whole sort of dangerousness and the sort of the car chases that developed obviously were made up for this film. But the film itself is really, really compelling. It reminded me a little bit of The Big Short, in that you get a sense of how the actual distribution right network actually work in the world. But you see how cutthroat that sort of business is. And if you've sort of ever been like interested in video games, this is a really good film to watch, because some of it is actually like the development of Nintendo and their handheld gaming systems and stuff. So it's an interesting little piece of history. Also very interesting on how the game Tetris developed, where it came from, and how it became the phenomenon that it is. It's also quite in a weird sort of way, quite timely, because you get a look into what Russia was like back then, and you find that it is still, as it is today, a very, very sort of dangerous and dodgy place.
So I have seen this, Darren, and when I finished watching it, I phoned Graham up straight away saying, they've made a film with you in mind. It's brilliant. I loved it. And I'll let Graham explain why it's for him.
I just absolutely loved it. The bit that I really liked was when they went in and saw the new Game Boy being developed, because that building he went into in Seattle, I used to go to Microsoft corporate headquarters in Seattle. And Microsoft and Nintendo share the same campus. And I was able to look across from this really boring Microsoft campus building towards the Nintendo, which had all of the Nintendo characters, massive big statues from all of their games there. And Microsoft was really boring. They'd have a box of Excel. And I remember those days when Mirrorsoft were about and Robert Maxwell's software company in the UK, and their games were shit, apart from Tetris. Yeah, it was really, really interesting. And I just loved it. Absolutely loved it. I certainly loved the spin they put on Maxwell. I thought that was really quite good. And how he got no money and he was shredding all these accounts and that sort of stuff. That was great fun. Really well put together movie.
Definite thumbs up all round, I think, that one.
Good
spot. Where are we off to next, Dan?
Okay, so let's look at the arty section, shall we? This is a film called, a recent movie called Triangle of Sadness. It starts with a young couple. He's a male model. She's a wannabe influencer. And they are both having a tough time in their very selfish and very superficial relationship. And they're trying to make their way in the world of art and media, and they're just really, really horrible people. And the life that they're trying to get into is full of horrible people. And so they go on a luxury cruise, which is full of all the wealthy, obnoxious establishment figures who they have various interactions with. And after they go through a disastrous storm, which causes absolute havoc on the ship, they get attacked by pirates. And a few survivors manage to find themselves stranded on a desert island where almost a Lord of the Flies type situation starts to develop as they battle to survive and find that they're pretty much useless at everything. Apart from one cleaner who is pretty adept at surviving. So, yeah, so that's that. And I've got to say, I've probably made the film sound a lot better than I actually found it, because I really did not like this movie. It's but the thing is, it starts really well. You have this sort of scene where the male model's at this really sort of arty, elaborate photo shoot with which is lots of people, arty people, all completely full of themselves. And then there's a scene next where him and his girlfriend have this big row about who pays for dinner and how. And it's and those two scenes are quite funny. But the problem is that every single scene and funny idea and scenario just goes on and on and on throughout the movie, and it gets really, really tedious. And the premise of this film is basically to have a go at the rich and the establishment, which I am all for. There's nothing wrong with having a go at the rich. It's something I really, really love. But this one just sort of goes so on and on. And it gets to a point where you actually think this should be a parody on really pretentious art movies, because that's how I felt watching it. There's lots of really gross humour during the storm where people are like throwing up and everything. Again, it just goes on and on. It's so over the top. There's lots of good ideas in this film. If you wrote a couple of short stories based on this, and like I said, the whole thing where the one who has her shit together and survive is the one person on the lowest rung of the ladder social-wise. There's some really good ideas in this. The problem is, it's just laborious to get through. When I think of sort of a satire, an established, anti-establishment type film, I think of something like Parasite, which has a certain style to it, but is also entertaining. And one of the things about Parasite is that you have characters in there who you get to actually like and root for, even if they're sort of doing bad things themselves. In this film, it gets so laborious because hardly anybody in this film is likable. Woody Harrelson plays this captain that's out of control, who you sort of like for a bit because he hates all the passengers on the ship. But even that goes on a bit. There's just no one to sort of like really root for in this. You know, there's no, you know. Was one I just felt that the film was completely up its own backside. And I was, this is not, and it's also very long. I think it's close to going on for 3 hours. The running time, 147 minutes, and it felt longer, to be honest.
You definitely not sold this one to me. I think you've got one more film for us before we have a quick wander in the TV section.
So my final movie, and we'll go to the Amazon Prime exclusive section for this, for the romantic comedies. So this one is Shotgun Wedding, and it stars the always lovely to look at Jennifer Lopez. And the best way I can describe this movie is that it's Die Hard at a wedding. And that's the best way I can say it. The premise is that there's a nice, glamorous couple are getting married on a luxury island. And they start off having to deal with the odd mix of family members and friends who are coming. And there's lots of comedy of, the different people who sort of aren't getting on and things. But what really gets out of hand is that a bunch of pirates arrive, and they manage to take everyone hostage except for the bride and groom, who have had a bit of a falling out, but find that they've got to work together to battle the pirates and to rescue their family members.
You look so much better than the rest of us.
I think the left boob is slightly lower than the right boob.
Something doesn't feel right.
There are pirates outside, and they took everybody hostage.
So this film has had quite the critical kicking, it has to be said. And I really don't know why, because This, to me, is a film which is a perfectly fine Friday or Saturday night movie. It's just a really fun, don't take it seriously comedy with some really good action parts. Jennifer Lopez, let's face it, she, you know, like I say, she always looks good. There's a, you know, the scene of her in a sort of in a nightwear at some point, which is always nice to watch. And as the film goes on, she starts off in a lovely, nice wedding dress, and by the end of the film, she's this machine gun toting warrior in the sort of in a wedding dress, which is all mucky and sort of torn to bits. I personally really liked this. The action scenes were fine. There was quite a few twists along the way of who was actually real villains of this piece was. The one thing as well about it is the family members that you meet, all the wedding guests, we've all got their own little sort of like little subplots and stories and quirks and stuff. You could have got a movie just with them in it. And basically just concentrated on them, and the movie would have been fun. But you add the the pirates into it, and the hostage taking, and all the action scenes, and it just takes in this completely different direction. I thought it was a really fun movie, a perfectly disposable little movie. You know, you watch it, have fun with it, and then just sort of forget about it. Which to me is the epitome of what renting movies in the '80s was all about. You just rented a movie. Then went along the way. You didn't have to critique it, or it didn't have to be the greatest film of all time. It's just a fun little movie.
You've ended on films as you started, something I can watch with the wife. Nice one, Darren.
That's what I say as well. This would be a really good date movie, You know, because it is a romantic comedy, but it's got lots of action scenes as well.
I don't want to build her hopes up. She should just be grateful sitting alongside me. Okay, that's movies then. So you're going to take us to the TV section next then?
Yeah, I've got a box set category in my little video store full of complete seasons of various little TV shows. First one is one that I've managed to steal from Netflix, burned it onto a set of discs. And it's a little film called Sky Rojo. Now, this is a nice little find. It's the third and final season has just aired, which I watched and enjoyed immensely. And this is pretty much a black comedy from Spain. And it's set in a high-class brothel, which is very glitzy and glamorous and sexy and classy from the outside. But when you go behind the scenes, you find that the girls are actually being exploited, they're bullied, they're realistically treated as slaves. You know, they go to this brothel thinking they're going to make lots of money, and what happens is that they find themselves with lots and lots of costs that they didn't know that they had before, and before they know it, they're actually in debt to the brothel owners, and trying to buy their way out becomes impossible. The story starts with three of the girls, Coral, Wendy and Gina, who get into an altercation with the head pimp. And they accidentally injure him, think they may have killed him. And so they decide that this is the time to attempt to flee. They escape. And for the next three seasons, they are running for their lives with the pimp and his various, frankly, unsavoury and absolutely horrible henchmen, determined to track them down and bring them back to the brothel to serve as a lesson to anybody else who's thinking of leaving. I discovered this show after its first season completely by chance. Just happened to see one of those sort of screensavers pop up on Netflix. It was just these three gorgeous girls with walking down the street with guns, looking all very glamorous. I thought, oh, what's this? And this show is absolutely fantastic. Very glitzy, very stylish, but it's got a really great heart at its core because it's about the sisterhood between these three characters. And them trying to escape and them trying to make a new life for themselves and looking out for each other. But along the way, they find that the only people who they can rely on are each other. Because wherever they go to help, like their regular customers who they think have got feelings for them, they get turned away. So they pretty much have to fight their way through out of scenario after scenario. It's very action-packed. The third season especially builds to an absolutely explosive climax with some really sort of good machine gun type battles and stuff like this. But you, the sense of it is, you do really care for these characters. You know, I wanted them to escape after season one, but obviously they keep getting found and having to fight their way out. I personally wanted the season to end early, with them just going off into the sunset and being happy and escaping for life. Because you get into these characters and you want them to escape. And I thought this show was absolutely fantastic. I know that some people will probably sort of have opinions on the fact that these are sort of like three gorgeous looking girls and basically things about, oh, the male gaze and everything. I think this is quite a powerful film for women because, like I say, they are very strong characters. And they go through their own sort of personal problems, but they're there for each other and are constantly trying to fight back against these really horrible male oppressors. And I've got to say, the villains on this are absolutely excellent. They're really hateful. Whenever any of them get the comeuppance, you really cheer. You know, so I personally really like this film. Very, like I say, very stylish, very glamorous in places, but above all, you get really invested in these girls trying to escape.
Is there a dub version or have I got to read again?
I watch the subtitle version because I always do.
Okay.
I honestly didn't check if it was a dubbed version. You might want to look into that, but I don't know. But it is worth...
I will have a look because I'm intrigued.
What used to be called this term that people had for Tarantino-type movies when they actually weren't.
Oh,
but
right.
That's sort of really glitzy, really stylish movie. The episodes as well are also half an hour, which doesn't sound a big deal, but nowadays most TV shows are like an hour episode, so it's half an hour that really moves really quickly by as well.
Well, it's something I would never have heard of, so thank you very much for bringing that to my attention.
Okay, box set number two here is Daisy Jones and the Six, which is an Amazon Prime series. Looks like it's only going to be one season, but that's not because it was sort of cancelled or anything like so many other shows which I start watching and never get a conclusion to. This was only ever meant to be, I believe, just one season, because it's a complete story and I hope it stays that way. Daisy Jones and the Six. This is actually based on a book by Taylor Jenkins Reid, who has become a really big author since. I actually was on the bandwagon for this series a lot longer than anybody else because I got an advanced copy of Daisy Jones and the Six and I absolutely loved it. And I thought, this is going to be a great book. And Taylor Jenkins Reid, she's become not so much with this one, even though that this was a big deal, this book, but she's become an author in other things as well. She did a book called The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, which I believe is being made into a TV show as well. I was really excited about the prospect of a TV show. This is set in the late 60s, and it's about a band who are on the rise called The Six. And just as they're sort of getting going, at the same time, there's a young singer-songwriter called Daisy Jones, who is working on her own career, and she's this young, free-spirited, sometimes wild and out of control, young girl. And a chance meeting between them leads to what should be a one-off collaboration, but actually changes both acts forever as they become their own little unit, which causes lots of upheaval in the band. I was a big fan of the book. It's written in one of those sort of styles where the entire book is actually written in like extracts from interviews between all the characters. Which works really, really well. And they've kind of created that a little bit in here as the series goes on. You see them being interviewed and telling the story as they go along. It takes a few episodes to get going, but once it gets to around about the third episode, when Daisy actually meets the band, it absolutely skyrockets. It's a fabulous TV show. It's very nostalgic for that sort of strange period in the 60s and 70s where pop was turning into sort of like going the direction of more and more edgier ground. So you've got that social type history to it. The show itself is so great. you know, you've got all these sort of characters, also to all, you've got all the tropes, you know, the drug taking, the sort of a life on the road, people falling for each other in the band, the incestuous relationships, you've got the fights, you've got the arguments over the songs, you've got the sort of the fights with management and everything like that. It's the ups and downs of being in a band at that time, but it's told so well. It's the things that you've seen before. Put it this way, I got to the final episode and I wept at times. The final episode is one of the best stick the landing of a TV show I've seen in ages. It's really emotional, really moving. This it does the book justice, and that's all I can say. It's been a great hit amongst, particularly under sort of like teenage girls and you know, young women in the 20s, especially because of the character of Davy Jones, who's kind of like this sort of this Janis Joplin light figure. But yeah, this was just a really great TV show. It's absolutely, you know, recommended. It's one season and done. I don't see where they could take the story any further. But yeah, this is a great series.
I'm definitely intrigued. And while you were talking, I was doing a Graham and checking my phone and found it's loosely based on Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, my guy got that vibe. But...
yeah. So, that's a definite see for me.
Yeah, definitely. It's getting huge, huge praise.
And a few of the songs in it as well are really good. You know, you could, you know, so sometimes things like this, you lose the authenticity because the songs don't match up. But the songs in this are really good themselves. You could sort of, you know, imagine these being like really good hits.
Yeah, no, definitely one I'm going to be watching. Wow. Oh, brilliant. Okay. I'm spoiled for choice now. And you've got one more for us, I think, Darren.
One more TV box set. This one is pretty much going to be a choice that you know, you will have heard of. It's Star Trek Picard Season 3.
Admiral on the bridge. And Captain on the bridge.
You will probably find this inspection boring for the likes of you two.
Boring?
Well, we won't be blowing things up. Taking or engaging in fire, crash landing expectedly or unexpectedly.
Those were the days.
Which has just come to its conclusion on Amazon Prime in the UK. And if you've watched series one and two, the response has been very mixed, it has to be said. I personally was not that big of a fan of them. They just felt overlong. I wasn't impressed with seasons one and two. And when I heard that we're doing a season three and that some of the old members of cast were going to come back, I kind of rolled my eyes personally. The thing I can say about Picard season three is this is the ending for the Next Generation cast that we never got in the movies. If you actually listen to the shows we've been doing, the retrospective as you could call it, of the Star Trek movies, when we got to the Star Trek Nemesis, The common consensus was that it was not a worthy farewell to the Next Generation. It ended on a dab squib. This writes that wrong so well because, let's not deny it, this was fan service done brilliantly. I can't get over how well this series worked when you see so many other sort of like, you know, trying to rehash old shows and horse movies and they don't work. This one works so good. I mean, I'm not even going to bother going into performance. All you need to know is that this is Picard and he ends up getting the gang back together. There's a crisis that comes up where, and the thing about it doesn't all happen all at once. You know, you have to wait. Each member of the crew comes along slowly at their own pace. You know, you don't get everybody in first episode. Right, we're all together, let's go. There's a slow build to each of these characters, you know, joining to the story. If you listen to the show we did on Star Trek Nemesis, you'll see that I mentioned how I would have liked a final movie to have gone. Now, I'm not going to say that this is exactly what I said, but it's along the same sort of lines, where it's not them going on a mission for the Federation. It's them coming together out of their camaraderie for each other. That's what it is. And this, like I said, I say that this is fan service. There is so many Easter eggs for fans. There are so many appearances by characters from Star Trek and from The Next Generation. You know, so many little sort of cameos. But they all work. It really does feel like setting right what went wrong in the past. The stuff that happens, and again, I'm not going to spoil it. Although, to be honest, I find it hard to believe that if you're a Star Trek fan, you've not managed to get through the whole season, or at least some of it by now. But there's some things in there.
Well, that's that would be Graham.
I'm on the last three now.
There are some moments in this series that make you want to stand up and applaud.
Yes.
I'm not kidding. If you're a Star Trek Next Generation fan, some of the stuff that happens in there, and there's links to other things in the Star Trek universe. There are a few links to storyline things that happened in Deep Space Nine. There's a couple of links to Voyager. It is a Next Generation TV show, but it's so well done, and it's so pleasing and wonderful.
Yes.
And the thing is, another thing as well that I sort of realised when I was thinking about this show is there's quite a few new characters in this. There's a captain in there for Pateka, who's a completely brand new character. And what's great about this show is that you actually like them as well. Sometimes when you watch these sort of shows, but the new characters, you kind of sort of, they're just there. You want to see your old faithful. But there's new characters in this that you really start to care for and like. You know, but they're not as intrusive. All I can say is that it felt watching this that I got The Next Generation back. I got Star Trek back, because for the past sort of 5 or 6 years has gone in this sort of direction. And it's not, I hate to say this, but it's not the Star Trek I knew and love. Even Picard seasons 1 and 2 didn't feel like Next Generation to me. They felt like this other sort of, you know, Star Trek thing that they were trying to push on us. This felt like I got Star Trek back. Yeah. And it's just absolutely wonderful. And it actually came to a final episode, and I was thinking, I hope it doesn't be a failure on the final episode. And it wasn't. The final episode was great. It really worked. It's an exciting, but still feels, like I say, it feels Next Generation. I got the crew back, and it was the goodbye that Nemesis never gave us. So yeah, I really recommend this one. It's probably one of the few TV shows that I'm going to go back and watch the whole season again at some point. It was that good.
Yeah, and I'd agree with absolutely everything of that. I'm on the third from the end now, and I'm absolutely loving it. I think it's got a great central mystery. The villains are fantastic, and the prime villain herself, she's great. And as you say, you've got the whole of the crew back together again. And the new people in the show, I think Geordi's daughter is fantastic as well. As she's really quite intense, and I really like that. And I can see her and Picard's son going off and doing another show about those two. So yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Spoiler.
Spoilers, lots and lots of spoilers.
Yeah. One thing I just want to say as well about this is the battle scenes,
yes,
with the ships are so refreshing, because watching like series 1 and 2 of Picard and a lot of the newer Star Trek thing, it's 500 ships on the screen at the same time, all firing lasers, all basically just blowing each other up. You know, it's just sort of like this constant sort of barrage of special effects. In this one, there's a style to the fights. The fights, the fights between the ships are imaginative. It's like Rafa Khan. It's sort of like that sort of dogfight type thing, trying to outwit each other, like two galleons going at it. And you can like sort of watch and savor them, as opposed to sort of, oh, we've got CGI now. We can have a big, massive battle thing constantly of lasers flying across the screen, but not really sort of being invested in anything. There's a real story to the battles, which I absolutely love.
And they also brought in some new things. Like, I loved the way they used the portals, you know, when they were having a fight. And that was so clever. Yeah. And the bit where they actually used an asteroid as a weapon as well, not to give anything away. That was so clever.
Yeah. But like I said, that's the thing. It's back to what Star Trek used to be. It was things like that as opposed to, you know.
To be, yeah, imaginative.
Okay.
Okay.
So.
Well, thank you for your time wandering around the shop.
Okay. So, guys, after hearing all my recommendations, what do you think you'll be wanting to rent tonight?
Ooh, I would think Catch the Fair One for me, the boxing girl going to rescue her sister. That sounds like a good sort of revenge movie for me. Yeah, I think that one. And I'll probably start work on Daisy Jones and the Six, because that sounds great.
So, typical Graham, he's picked exactly the same two I was going to pick. Both of those right up my street, absolutely.
That's brilliant.
I mean, yeah, Catch the Fair One sounds, it's so intriguing. And yeah, everything about the setting, the music of Daisy Jones and the Six has hooked me. So I think we'll have to settle our differences outside to see who rents what. Excuse us for a couple of minutes.
In true 80s video store style, I've only got one copy of each.
I remember those days.
So anyway, guys, before you go, just want to tell you something. Because this is the first day of the store, I'm doing a special offer. And I'm basically going back to 1980 prices. So your rentals today, you can get for just 50p each. How's that for you?
That sounds good to me. Is there a catch?
No, 50p per rental, there you go. Now, I have actually got a special bonus offer that I'm doing for you as well, because even though you're basically going to be watching these at home, I know that you guys love the cinema experience. So I've actually put together a little cinema snack pack. In this pack, you get a soft drink, you get a little hot dog, packet of popcorn, and you get 100 grams of pick and mix, all in a little tidy pack so that you can create the cinema experience at home. Are you up for that? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, definitely up for that. Graham's always up for a little hot dog.
All right. Okay. So I'll put that in for you. So, like I say, your video selections are 50p each, and your authentic cinema packs will be £30 each for that.
Oh, we're not doing 80s prices for that then.
No, like I say, I'm creating the authentic cinema experience. Yipping you off just like the cinemas.
Well, thank you, Darren.
Right. Darren's movie store will be open again for business. Until then, see you at the Flicks.